Session on Senate Bill 5525 will come back to order, and we have Senator Dean Timms, one of our co-chairs for the Ways and Means. And the question was, Senator Timms, relative to the criteria in the 95-97 and 97-99, the previous leaders had made the payment of the money, the $65 million and the $80 million amounts, come out of the general fund revenues up front so that the kicker, so that money was removed from the kicker previously. And we have a motion before us at present from Senator Trowe to go ahead and have the $80 million withdrawn from revenues and paid out up front in effect within the current biennium. If you could give us a brief explanation to we'll have it done that in
the for the record, my name is Steve Kim, what we're trying to do in this process is make sure that we are consistent when we make the payment. 97-99 is the payment we make, 95-97, we have it all paid up. We want to make sure that it doesn't affect the kicker, and that is in the stipulation. It also gives us more money under appropriations, which right now we're under a spending limit. If we use this, that will help us in regards to that. So the co-chairs and the budget is made up around the fact that we want this to be in the 97-99 with a stipulation that it doesn't affect the kicker. If we did put it in there, there wouldn't be a kicker. So the argument is whether you want to have a kicker, like we've had in other arguments in this committee, I believe.
Has nothing to do with a kicker.
Senator,
the idea.
Okay.
The way that it is presently, it would not affect the kicker. The amendment that's been offered to us today, it would in fact affect the kicker.
Okay.
Now, we were in the process of a vote. Those in favor of the amendment, which has been offered by Senator Trowe, to create the same criteria as the past biennium, to pay out the $80 million out of the upfront revenues, would so indicate by saying,
we need a no vote on this.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
No.
Crowe.
Aye.
Lynn.
No.
Ariola.
No.
Butler.
No. The motion to create the same criteria fails, and we'll go ahead then and consider the proposed amendment to Senate Bill 5535. This is the exact one amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Ariola.
So moved.
It's moved that we insert on line 5, 1999 instead of 1997. Discussion, Senator Show.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry that the amendment failed, but I think the bill is needed, and I think I'll vote for it.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Crowe moves that we approve with the amendment. Well, let's see. Let's go ahead and take the amendment first.
You don't need to have me make them.
Okay. let's take the dash one amendment. Those in favor, please. Is there anyone opposed to the dash one amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator,
I look in the dock. What's the dash one amendment?
We just passed the mushroom bill, and a lot of us are still in the dark.
Okay.
Anyone opposed? If not, then we'll go ahead and approve the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 5535. Line 5 now reads for biennium beginning July 1st, 1997, out of the general fund, amount of $80 million to be paid. Is there any objection to that the bill as presently presented at this time?
I'll move the bill as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Due pass recommendation of the full House has been recommended by Senator Farioli. Are there any objections to that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lynn.
Where does that, do we have enough general fund to pay for $80 million at this point?
Yes, we do.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Mike's got it in his top right there.
Okay, right out of here.
It is in the court's discretion. It is accountable.
You got to pay either one way or another anyway.
One way or another, and this gets to be, as opposed to the skipping, which you see presently, the skip of the zero here, it moves it back and brings it into the timely fashion. Senator Crow, was there further question or comment?
I just want to say that as a vote explanation, I'm going to vote in favor of this. And I think it's a good move to change the year for the expenditure limitation purposes. I think that's a wise move. I'm hoping that the fact that we pass this out doesn't remove this as a possible negotiating item if we ever get together to negotiate how we're going to balance the budget and adequately fund schools.
Senator Phil, that your point is very, very well taken. And, I've been interviewed by some folks here, and they said, as an accountant, is this a good idea? And I said, as an accountant, I tell people to pay their bills and pay out of debt. So it's just as to when the timing is that we pay our bills, and that's your point is well taken. I appreciate that. The motion has been made that we go to a due pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means on Senate Bill 5535. Are there any objections? Representative Leonard objects. Any other objections? Noting the objection of Representative Leonard, we will pass Senate Bill 5535 to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. And let's see, Senator Farioli, where you made that, would you like to go ahead and get the full explanation on it? And let's see, we're going to move on to House Strength Rules. We'll go ahead and close on 5535. And we've asked Mr. Stanton, our legislative fiscal officer for the state, has asked that we move House Strength Resolution 35 as the next item of business, recognizing we've got a full room here, and I apologize, but we shouldn't be a great deal of time. I think we just have one item of testimony on House Senate Resolution 35, and we're set for a public hearing and a possible work session.
Mr. Chair, who is heading this 5535? Are we deciding now?
He
is. Okay.
Yes, Senator Perry Old will be carrying it.
Okay.
Okay, we'll open the work session on House Strength Resolution 35, and this is a public hearing, I beg your pardon, public hearing for House Strength Resolution 35, and we have with us today, and we're waiting for Representative Steve Harper to come down, but please, Raleigh, if you'd like to go ahead, Raleigh Weisbach from the Office of the State Treasurer.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to be sure to remind Raleigh of the financial penalty for using acronyms today. It's a quarter for every acronym that you use that you don't correct, and it's for what he called for American Cancer Society. We just wanted to make sure that you're aware of that.
This is his fourth appearance before, so it's four times the amount of a dollar a piece. Ooh. For the treasurer's office. So don't reach for your
chair.
Don't
reach for your change
first. Reach for your wallet. Okay. Mr. Weisbach.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Raleigh Weisbach. I'm the Chief of Staff of the Oregon Treasury, and I'd like to address some of our concerns about House Joint Resolution 35. Though the sponsors of the bill did try to address the Treasury's concern with debt and with the pension areas, there's still some large areas of concern that we have with HDR 35. One of our concerns is a broad policy level. HDR 35 does not allow tomorrow's voters or legislators to act independently of the action that will be taken through this bill. The bill seems to say that we're going to put constraints or we don't trust those future legislatures or the future voters. And just talk a little bit about the Constitution and our perception of the Constitution, and I'd like to draw that to some practical applications and how I think this bill has a negative impact. The Constitution was envisioned, I think, by our forefathers as a tool to guide government. The Constitution was established a system that places the power of the Legislative Assembly in the hands of the Legislative Assembly, the power to deal with present concerns and activities. Now, it allows you, it charges you to deal with what's going on in this state now and to respond to it. The framers of the Constitution put limits on your ability, this legislative ability, to rein in or constrain future legislatures. It's interesting that this bill does exactly that. And with one, let me give you one example of that. This bill limits future legislative ability to use general obligation debt in excess of the limits that would be established or currently established. As we read, let me take a step back here and say there's great ambiguity in how this bill is written. Our concern in dealing with the finances of the state is that ambiguity is not clarified by the intent of this body. That when you're dealing with constitutional amendments, the intent, legislative intent, does not play a role. So anything that you really desire to have happen relevant to this bill doesn't count. All that counts is what's on the paper. That's how the courts and that's will interpret this bill. That ambiguity leaves great concern with, for example, general obligation debt. On line 7 of the bill, we're limited to existing provisions within the general fund budget for future appropriations. What happens, let me raise this as an example, what happens when we have a decline in the appropriation ability because we have a decline in private sector revenues as defined in the formula, and I'm not debating the formula. What happens if you have that decline over a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years? You have a general obligation debt level that you have to repay set at a given level, let's say $300 million. That is an obligation that the state has made by contract and covenant to repay that debt. What happens if under that provision level, it says, let me read the provision, it says, expenditures made from the general fund in each biennium should be no greater than the appropriation for such purposes. My example is the general obligation debt. For such purposes, what happens if the ability, the appropriation declines and we can't pay that debt? It's a general obligation of the state of Oregon. You have signed contract and covenant that says that you will repay that debt. And if you, the way I interpret this, it is not clear. And again, I'm saying it's not your intent that matters here. It doesn't count. What does count is what's written on the paper, and it says that appropriation for those purposes limits your ability to pay the debt, general obligation debt.
Or, Mr. Weisbrot, can I just ask one question, Raleigh? Has this ever happened in the history of the state since the Great Depression that we have these kinds of downturns?
Yes, sir.
It has.
I can think of someone. I was in the state when we had
a continuous number of downturns.
Yeah, I think enough that it can impact that service.
Five calendar years.
I think the early 80s certainly went through that level of decline.
To such a point that we would not have been able to pay our general debt?
No, I think the point is that a line is drawn, the appropriation level is set at a formula of what, let me read what the formula is. It's twice the level up or down of what, again, the private sector, if that formula says it is going to be in decline and we have a hard line drawn in the sand, we will expend no more than this. We can expend no more, and that expenditure is set very hard. And if you have a decline over those rolling 5 years that takes you as it takes the general fund in that area below that line, you would not be able to, as I understand this, you would not be able to pay that debt. You would have to reduce the amount that you're paying for the general obligation debt.
You have some examples from the early 80s that would show us that, in fact, we had the five preceding downturns in such a fashion that we would not be able to meet our general obligation debt.
I could probably work that out, but I'm suggesting that that is the case. But that line is going to be so narrowly drawn for that area that you would, in fact, be in risk at that level.
That we couldn't meet our general obligation debt.
That you would be prohibited. Not that the revenues wouldn't be out there, but you would be prohibited in that area from meeting that debt. I'm raising it as a distinct possibility.
I see. So your interpretation of it is that with those five successive downturns, that for the five successive preceding years, that we would not be legally bound to pay our debt. Is that what,
Mr. Chair? That's exactly. I thank you for the clarification. I don't think I was fitting out clearly. I'm saying exactly that, but I think you would be prohibited from paying your legal debt, that you have a constitutional conflict. Let me throw another example out, again, keeping the general obligation ability there. Line 7 again says, appropriations for such purposes as in the previous biennium increased or decreased by twice the average annual percentage change in the biennium, the state's private sector income for the five calendar years, et cetera, that formula. That if this body, and this is one of the constraints that I would be concerned about, a constraint on future legislatures, that we would have, let me run an example, this is a hypothetical example, that you would have a series of years, let's say 4 or 5 years, where you're paying general obligation debt of, let's say, $300 million, that you're paying a certain rate. And you want to increase the general obligation debt of the state for one of the constitutional purposes that is allowed, for example, for higher education. If you wanted to increase that general obligation debt beyond that limit, you could not do so.
But excuse me, maybe I misunderstood. The general obligation debt, isn't it fixed, though? Don't we have under our debt obligations, we know 10 years in advance how much we'll be paying on that bond for that particular date.
I'm saying that that's precisely what you couldn't, what it says in line 7, that each biennium shall be no greater, its appropriation should be no greater than the appropriations for such purposes in the previous biennium. So whatever you paid for that general obligation debt last session, if you want to increase it, for example, higher education comes to you and they say, we have $500 million in deferred maintenance that we need to, and we want to incur debt to take care of that general, that deferred maintenance. That if you had an appropriation level of $100 million and you needed to increase that appropriation level, this would constrain you. You could not do so.
This would constrain new debt, but it wouldn't constrain the payment of previous existing debt.
I'm saying it would do both. It potentially could do both. If the combined I'm reading it again on line 7. Put my glasses back on so I can hear what I'm saying. For purposes of increased by or decreased by twice the average annual percentage change in the private sector's income for the five calendar years preceding the biennium, if that formula would reduce, percentage-wise, would force a reduction of a given percentage, you had $100 million in general obligation debt, hypothetically. That formula would force a reduction in your ability to make an appropriation to pay that general obligation debt. You have a problem.
And that would be an existing outstanding debt, not a new debt.
That's the existing outstanding debt, and it would put you, I think, in contractual violation, and it would put you in violation of the covenants of that debt.
Have you examined this with the legislative council or council for the treasurer of the state?
Yes, sir. We have, and that's,
do we have an opinion?
The opinion that we have is that the language is so ambiguous that these are the areas that we are mutually concerned with. The attorney general,
do you have a written opinion that you can share?
We have a letter that is very strong, saying that this piece of legislation is ambiguous in that area, and it's that ambiguity that creates a great concern on the part of the Attorney General. It certainly creates great concern on the part of the Treasury, that these terms are not defined. For example, the term general fund is not defined. The term appropriation is not defined. We're dealing with some very complex areas in the Treasury, and I know certainly the other areas you deal with as ranking means are very complex. And the fact that these definitions have not been clarified, there is no definition for general fund. There's no definition in the Constitution for general fund. It's a statutory definition. As the fear is that we constitutionally constrain what is determined as general fund obligation, what is the general fund, you constitutionally constrain, it's a statutory definition. There is no definition in the Constitution. This does not provide it, what general fund is. We can change general fund. You can change general fund.
I almost did just a few minutes ago. You see, and I guess that's one thing that I don't have a great deal of concern about, is if we can change what the meaning of general fund is that easily, then I guess I'm not terribly hung up over the ability to pay the outstanding debt that we already have contracted.
Oh, yes. We're really concerned about that. I mean, you may not be concerned, but I am. And that's what, you know, keeps on here getting trained grayer and grayer all the time. Let me move forward and suggest a couple areas where I think there may be some problems. For example, if the lottery earns more money than the preceding year's limitation, there's a potential that, for example, that you would have to give back the excess earnings of the lottery over what that expenditure level was made for in the preceding biennium. And that would go; those monies would go back to the taxpayers. But let me point out another area. Again, I'm reading from line 7, says, you draw a bright line, 7 in the bill suggests you draw a very bright line in the debt you cannot spend over that bright line. We're expecting $2.4 billion in tobacco revenues flowing into the state. There will not be an appropriation or expenditure for that money. It's going to be new money, and somehow you're going to deal with it. There is no previous level for that. Let's assume you establish a previous level of appropriation and expenditure. The money's going to flow out at about $80 million per year. That you have an appropriation and an expenditure that addresses that $80 million in flow of tobacco revenue. You will exceed it by 100% next year. Next year. And that would violate the Constitution. That money would then have to be returned to the voters. The voters never earned that money. If you exceed that appropriation level by the amount that's allowed in the formula, and again, I'm not debating the formula. It sounds as reasonable as any formula for establishing that level. If you exceed that appropriation level by whatever the formula, the money has to be returned. We also state you bring in by the fees and the licenses that you have established, if those fees and licenses as the grosses come in at a higher level, that money would have to be distributed to the taxpayers who did not pay the fees or licenses. And again, I'm not saying it will happen that way. That's some of the ambiguity that's relevant to this. That's relevant to this bill.
Raleigh, could you share? Is the letter that you have from the Attorney General, is that something you can share so we could have copies of?
Mr. Chair, I did share an excerpt of that letter with the previous committee. I'll be happy to do so. Immediately we did extrapolated. It was a number of pages. We extrapolated the primary concern. I understand that you're let me raise one or two last quick points, and I'll get out of your hair here. The term appropriation, as I said, has not been defined. And potentially could include amounts that are continuously appropriated versus amounts that are appropriated by specific legislative act accession. That's a big area. Again, the term appropriation has not been defined. It's not defined in the bill. And there are 113 accounts that are continuously appropriated by this budget. Let me just read
what if we could get those defined.
I can.
The 113, if we could get those defined by amendment, would the Treasurer's office feel more comfortable with this particular paragraph?
I would feel more comfortable with that paragraph.
Okay.
They should be exempted.
Mr. Chair? Representative Krupp is recognized.
Raleigh, if it could be addressed, your concerns in regard to the repayment of bonded debts, and you bring forth a good point in regards to constitutional definitions. If those things could be addressed, does that effectively eliminate the treasurer's opposition or concerns?
Boy, that's a tough question to answer. I think what, for us, you know, to be at any comfort level whatsoever with this, it's got to have clarity and definition. We're dealing with the debt of the state and the finances of the state. We're issuing lottery bonds, and this affects it. We're issuing general obligation debt. This affects it. And if we get to a position where that bright line precludes us from, constitutionally precludes us from paying the debt, we've got a huge problem that overshadows anything the legislature could do. So I hate to sign on very easily saying that we can make some quick amendments. I'm not capable of doing those. Let me put it right out. This is a two paragraph or bill. It's in the simplicity, it gets so complex that it's far beyond the capacity of the Treasury to resolve this, which is one reason why we asked the Attorney General. We don't have the skill set to do this. We know where some of the problem areas lie, and we've addressed those with Representative Harper, and we've addressed those very clearly and aggressively. And they have made attempts, and I'm not trying to say that anybody's trying to steamroll anything here. I'm suggesting that they have made attempts to resolve those issues, but they continue to be there. This is so complex that someone out there needs to bring in some really high-caliber bond counsel from New York to sit down and talk with you. That's not us. I mean, you know, we don't have a meter that's going to get you there. It needs the Attorney General at the table, saying, because the Attorney General has suggested to us that you have risk in these areas. Treasury, you have risk in these areas because of the ambiguity. So my answer would be, yeah, we can solve all the problems. Of course we'd resolve it, but I don't see, it's going to take an awful lot of work, and I don't see where we can't do it. I can't give you, with some of the bills, I could come to you and say, gee, let me draft an amendment for you. And we have the skill set to do that, or we have an Attorney General that has the skill set to do that. This is beyond what that skill set is. And I truly recommend that if you're going to get into it, we need to have some pretty high-five bond counsel take a look at this. We need to have some other areas.
Is that resolve the question?
I do appreciate the fact that you brought in this issue of the concern about the lottery, and I appreciate the concerns that I've expressed to the Treasurer's Office about the lottery and about the continued dependence on the lottery being at certain levels. And if lottery isn't one of the items that is addressed currently on the revenues, quote unquote, and the income of the state, then maybe that's something that could be sorted through. And I appreciate, but I would like to share four members of the committee the information that's gone to the committee that heard the bill.
Mr. Chair, I consider that done.
Thank you very much.
You'll have it.
Any further questions?
And just for the cancer society event.
Whoa! Oh, yeah, hey. Since you left contributing to the American Cancer Society, the pig's getting fat. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Representative Harper with us today, Majority Leader Harper. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Harper, State Representative from District 53. I'm always fascinated when I have conversations with big government types about how they think it's their money. These problems that we just heard from Treasury, this Ann Gross bill I have in front of me was dated May 3rd. We had the hearings about a month prior to that. I made the fixes that he recommended. I haven't heard this other stuff until just a minute ago. So I'm real sorry your budget's already going out, Raleigh. That's a joke. HR 35, I think we've heard. Very simple concept. It doesn't have to be as complicated as the big spenders want to make it. Very simple. You grow government at the same rate that your own personal income grows. We have the existing law, our spending limit law, that we've had some discussions on. It's 20 years old. Been working somewhat for the last 20 years. Has several exceptions to it, very difficult to administer. Tried to fill some of those holes. to make this something clean and easy. It says general fund because we needed to say general fund. It gives a 5-year moving average just so we have a line that is somewhat, the slope is somewhat modified. It says that that's what we can grow government. And if we collect excess taxes, then we give it back to the people. And I really find it just absolutely astounding that we think giving money back to the people is a horrible thing to do. We have some issues that we might want to take back and work, and I think that's what we'll do. We don't want to pass it out today. Go back and re-scrub this to make sure there aren't any real holes out there. But we've been working on this thing for the best part of 3 months, solidly, off and on. I think Mike has some ideas, so don't hold a work session, but we want to take a look and see if we can come back with something that makes it a little bit clearer. This is as simple as it gets. This is the way you run your house and run your business if you're a business person.
Sure. Sometimes as you run your house, you suddenly have somebody who gets terribly ill, and even though your income is such, the illness means you've got to spend a lot more money. So you have to go out and get it. States can have the same thing happen to them. They can look like they're handling things, and all of a sudden along comes something major. Maybe the people pass an initiative that says you have to build 12 new prisons or whatever because of crime or whatever it is. And you need more money than you had before. And an expenditure limitation can bind you and keep you from solving problems. And if you lock it into the Constitution, especially, it's very hard to solve those problems if you put strictures around your ability to act.
Senator Crowe, if you have a problem in your house, then you go take care of the problem. If it's a higher priority than something else you're doing, you sell your boats. If the government, if we get saddled with higher priorities from the people, then we take care of that, and we don't do some other things. That's just the way life works. Why do we think it's that much different?
Because it doesn't work. A lot of people go in debt. They go tremendously in debt. The amount of personal debt in this country is tremendous. We just study it.
Thank you. And have the debt service.
And I think
appreciate Chair. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, just go sell your boat. Everybody has a boat. Everybody owns a house. There's a lot of people that can't afford to buy a house. So they're struggling to get by. And with your analogy, and they have somebody sick in the family, can't sell a boat, can't sell a car, they're stuck. And, I mean, my view is the schools in this state are spiraling downward. And we have mandate after mandate laid upon us. And it's getting, our discretionary spending is getting less and less. Our mandatory spending is getting more and more. We have Measure 5, Measure 50, on and on. And then this, it seems as though these kinds of measures reflect not so much a confidence in the taxpayers, they do a lack of confidence in the legislature to do the right thing and make decisions that are in the best interest of the state. And I'm concerned that we're just hamstringing ourselves to the point that without, you know, maybe consciously doing that to the point that we're really doing harm to our state.
Thank you very much, Representative Lynn. Other comments from the members of the committee? I guess at this point, thank you very much, Representative Harper. I understand that we'll get a copy of a letter from the Attorney General expressing the concerns the Attorney General has with definitions of appropriations, income, and revenue, and those kinds of things, that perhaps we can bring forth some amendments that will be able to resolve some of the concerns that are the issues here, and we can have a work session on that with those amendments in hand. I really appreciate the analogy that you've made, Representative Harper, that Representative Leonard has made. No, not everybody has a boat, but not everybody has a $10.8 billion income from general fund on a biennium either. And that's, I guess, the concern that I've got is that we're actually spending nearly $30 billion of total funds. And there are some choices that sometimes we have to make which are difficult choices within our own household, working with budgets all of my life. There are difficult decisions that my children have to make as they decide to start families while they're still in college. And those are difficult decisions for us to make, but they seem to make it. They seem to make it work by working at night in the gas station. So what I think Representative Harper is trying to do is to say we might have to put the station, or the state to work in the gas station for a little bit while we accumulate enough money to pay our obligations. But I wanted to make sure that we understood that this gave us this opportunity. Thank you very much.
The scope of this, and I don't know if you have that handout, it's about 2.5 points. That's what we're looking at. 2.5% of the budget is the issue here. You know, and I would assume we are very smart people. We are very hardworking. And I figure that we can prioritize our budget to the 97.5 percentile.
Can you give us that handout? I don't know that we have that handout. If we can get that handout.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It really is pretty workable.
And we'll get that passed around. Now, let's see. We had Representative Messerly and then Representative Hanson.
Well, just to belabor the household income analogy a little bit farther. I think what this has the chance of doing, though, is you're saying, yeah, times get tough, you can go out and get the second job and bring in more income. And I think this prevents the state from being able to do that. That no matter what the problem is, you put a cap on the expenditure and a cap on the revenue coming in to solve the problem.
Revenue would be cut because of the income, the general income of the state. The expenditures would be controlled by the legislature. And I think that's one of
your ability to
expend. You couldn't expend freely, that's right.
Yeah. So you can't go out and get the night job in the gas station to solve your problem.
That's basically right. When your revenues are cut, and at that particular point, it's as a result of the downturn in the overall economy, as I read the bill, twice the average of the annual percentage change from the state to private sector income.
Or, not just a downturn in the economy, but if you've got some extraordinary problems, during the times are good, you can't deal with them either.
Let's get the information
Representative Messer is representing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do support this measure. But I think there's some things that we also need to talk about. I fully understand the bonding ability and the bond rates and how important that is and how we have to structure this or other bills that we have to protect them. The one issue that we haven't talked about here today, at least, that I think fits right into this, and that is our reserves, which we're totally lacking, I think, in this state, which also affects the bond rating. And I think this is just one piece of the puzzle, and we also need to take a very, very serious look at our ability to have a reserve in the state. And I think they really go together.
I think Raleigh really addressed that when he started talking about the tobacco fund. If that was set aside in a reserve as opposed to expended, then you would have a reserve that potentially could be dipped into. Thank you very much, Representative Harper. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair,
we had one other person sign up, and I want to take a very short amount of testimony. Tim Nesbitt, if you'll come forward, and then we're going to give you 3 minutes. You can use it wisely, please, if you would, please. Mr. Nesbitt is from represents the Oregon State Council.
So it's not to use an acronym, Mr. Chair. SEIU stands for Service Employees International Union. And I'm the Executive Director, and our council represents 28,000 public and private sector workers in Oregon. I provide a written testimony. I'd just like to summarize a few comments in opposition to HDR 35, both in concept and in detail. The premise seems to be that we have such a arguably high rate of state spending growth that we need something like an HDR 35. I would submit that if we're focused only on the state's general fund, we're misleading ourselves. In fact, total state and local taxes in Oregon have been declining as a percent of our personal income throughout this decade. And that's primarily because of the tax cutting resulting at the local level in property taxes from Measure 5 and Measure 47 and Measure 50. According to the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, total state and local taxes in Oregon have declined from 12.3% of personal income to just 10% of personal income for the last 10 years. So if this is the perceived problem to be solved, we submit that this is not the problem at all, and in fact, the problem that deserves greater attention is the lack of resources to adequately fund K-12 and higher education and all the other programs we care about that are funded by the general fund in the state. Further, we want you to think of this, that the thinking underlying HCR 35 is that some tax dollars that you collect and spend ought to be off the table, ought to be subject to a different standard, namely that you can't spend them. We submit that all tax dollars you collect, first dollars and last dollars, are collected only for the purpose of meeting important public needs, funding services. You ought to be applying the same criteria to how you spend first dollars as to how you spend last dollars. And it's arbitrary to draw a line, wherever it is, and take away from you the discretion to decide in each biennium how much of those tax dollars you're collecting should be going into funding services that our citizens care about, and how much should be refunded. Again, whether they're first dollars or last dollars. And finally, I want to point out that a few of the details of HCR 35 which give us pause. By using total personal income as the yardstick for its spending limit, this measure would give undue weight to certain factors and not others. For instance, capital gains are not part of the calculation of total personal income as defined in HCR 35. And yet capital gains throw up significant revenue for the general fund. And
I'm missing that. I'm sorry. Where is capital gains?
We checked with Paul Warner of LRO, and the definition of total personal income that this would have us use does not count in its measurement as provided by, I think it's the Bureau of National Affairs, BNA. It does not include in its calculation capital gains.
The state's private sector income on line 9, because Oregon doesn't recognize capital gain as anything other than just ordinary income.
That's correct. Capital gain is a revenue source and a significant one. But when you then use as your yardstick total personal income, that is a definition which does not include capital gain.
Where is the term total personal income? I'm sorry, I'm missing it somewhere.
Line 10.
Total personal income.
Okay.
As computed by the federal government, and the agency that computes that is DNA. And talking to Paul Warner yesterday,
total personal income.
Mr. Warner clarified to me that total personal income, as computed by the federal government, does not include one's capital gains. And yet capital gains are a significant portion of one's income if one is lucky enough to have capital gains. Capital gains, in fact, are a major contributing source of revenue through our personal income tax system. So all that flows in on the revenue side, and yet we then would use a yardstick on the expenditure side, which does not include that as a measure of personal income. So we're comparing apples and oranges here. And we're also comparing apples and oranges by excluding the compensation of government employees, but that's another matter.
Do you have a letter from Mr. Warner to that effect so that we could
use it? Sure, I don't, but I talked to him just yesterday to complain.
Okay, all right.
Secondly, I want to point out that by focusing only on the state's general fund, HCR 35 would put funding for schools, higher education, human services, courts, and corrections under its limits while exempting funding for highways and other services supported by dedicated revenues. Why the double standard? Also, by mandating refunds of excess revenues to income taxpayers, this measure will exclude from its tax relief mechanism low-income families who pay no income taxes but pay a high percentage of their income in gas taxes, property taxes, often reflecting rent, and other taxes. So the tax relief here would be going only to income taxpayers, whereas citizens pay all forms of taxes, and our lowest earning citizens, in fact, don't pay income taxes, but pay a high percentage of their income in other taxes. And finally, there's a cyclical factor that you should keep in mind, and that is that in periods of decline, if we don't have a stabilization fund, if we see declines in personal income, those are exactly the periods of time when there's great demand for public services. There'll be greater demand for the Oregon Health Plan. greater demand for assistance to the unemployed. And it's exactly at that time when we need countercyclical spending, I would submit, to address those needs and demands. And this proposal, if placed in our Constitution, would put a straitjacket on our ability, as I think Senator Tro was mentioning before, to respond to those kinds of emergent needs.
Well, people could jump forward and do another amendment at that point if they felt like that they were being placed in a straitjacket, that they wanted the state to go ahead and borrow a ton of money to come and help them out of their terrible circumstances.
Mr. Chair, this measure doesn't provide for any reconsideration or safety valve, and I think if we're talking about what should go in our Constitution, we should be confident enough to tell the voters this will work for the foreseeable future and not...
We've got fish, and we've got firearms, and we've got all sorts of things in our Constitution. So, I mean, there's all sorts of different things in there today that probably shouldn't be in there. So, I guess...
One more won't hurt.
Yeah, one more.
I might go
back. We use that argument a lot around here.
Pretty good, when we're done. But
one more bad one.
I guess the concern I've got is that if we had that kind of a turndown and the people really wanted the state to put a lot of money together, but, you know, to borrow a lot of money to help them out of their terrible critical financial condition, probably they would entertain another amendment. Senator Perry will address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know all the history of the spending limitations, but I have the impression that it was legislatively and voter approved. So I guess as nettlesome as it might be, those pesky constituents of ours are directing us to do certain things like limit the spending, limit the size, limit the growth of government. And they send that message in various ways. And whether or not the messages are kindly received or well received or even, by our opinions, appropriate is immaterial. Those initiatives get voted, and there may be less trust for government now than there ever has been, and voters seem to value the initiative process. And if that's how they choose to send their messages, we don't have much choice but to honor the Constitution. That's the law. So I guess I understand that we have that there are differences of opinion. This spending limitation isn't a pure construct of the legislative process. I believe it has also been voter approved. So I guess the concept isn't one that we should take lightly. And I appreciate the fact that all tax dollars that are appropriated have a purpose. Some are constitutionally mandated, and some are mandated in statute, and some by rule. But I guess the day we say in government that we can spend everything that we can get, maybe they'll just pat people down as they walk in the building to see how much they're carrying and call it a tax and just say thanks very much and we'll spend it wisely. But I don't think that is what voters have told us to do.
Thank you very much, Senator Farrell. We're on a time budget now. We do have four bills to get through in the next 15 minutes. Did you have anything further, Mr. Ness, with your time?
No, just to find an acronym, I'll conclude my testimony ASAP.
And I appreciate it. The American Cancer Society appreciates it as well. Thank you, and we'll close the public hearing portion of House Senate Resolution 35. We will open the work sessions on Senate Bill 5540, House Bill 5006, 5007, and House Bill 5028. These are the commissions on Commission for Women, Commission on Asian Affairs, Commission on Black Affairs, and Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And we have with us Steve Bender. Steve, would you like to share with us, please, the legislative fiscal report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Our recommendation is really fairly simple, and it won't take me very long to explain it at all. The four advocacy commissions whose budgets were cut during the current biennium are before you today. The governor proposed increasing general fund support for each of the four commissions to $135,000 to enable them to meet their personal services and services and supply expenses entirely from the state general fund support. LFO recommends that you approve this, that is to say the governor's recommendation, with one change, and if I can refer you to this sheet here that says detail of LFO recommendations, I have two recommendations here for you. The first one applies to all four budgets that are before you today, and that is we recommend that you reduce general fund support from the governor's level by $5,400 for each budget. That is equal to 4% of the governor's recommended amount. And this is proposed because of limited general fund availability and the committee's desire for agencies to realize administrative efficiencies. You have, of course, considered 4% cuts in other budgets that you've looked at, and we recommend those for these agencies as well. That would bring the LFO recommendation for general fund support to each of the four commissions to a total of $129,600. As opposed to the $135,000 that the governor is recommending. There's a one-page sheet here that looks at, that discusses the history of state support for each of the four advocacy commission budgets. If you look at those, you'll see that the LFO recommendation amount would represent increases in state support for the commission of between 26 and 29% from their current levels. One other item that's on the, this sheet here that discusses the state support, at the bottom is an addendum on DAF service charge reductions for small agencies. If I could, Mr. Chair, just take a minute to explain this.
Let me just take this a moment because I really need to give acknowledgement to the Department of Administrative Services. I want to express appreciation, and I need to do so privately as well as publicly, to Director John Yunker, Teresa McHugh, Larry Warner, for the job that they did for us in bringing us the efficiency in the Department of Administrative Services and being able to reduce, and Senator Lem was largely instrumental in saying, wait a minute, can't we cut these folks a better deal? And so this is a Herculean effort that has brought us to this point, and there's a lot of people who have done a lot of very, very good work, including the members of this committee, I might add, in helping us to trim back some other budgets. They were hard cuts, but were there, and that's why we have the funds that we have today. And so this next item is largely as a result of an idea by Senator Lem to come up and say, let's not nick everybody the same percentage overall. Let's give these smaller commissions a little bit better idea as to what they can get by with. And then what's happened is legislative fiscal work with the Department of Administrative Services, and that's where we're at this particular point. We'll turn it back to the Legislative Fiscal Office at this point so you can explain those assessment reductions, Steve.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. At the bottom of this table here, you will see the addendum on the service charge reduction. The number to say assessment reduction or the reduction of DAF in DAF's assessment to each of these four commissions as a result of the discussions that the chair was talking about. So, for example, if you look at the first column, the Commission on Asian Affairs, their DAF assessment is being reduced by over $9,700 as a result of these discussions. And the rest of this shows that even with the 4% efficiency cut, if you take out the $5,400 that LFO is recommending, the commissions will still have more money available after paying their state service charges than was the case in the governor's recommended proposal when that was put together. So, Mr. Lawson here from DAF, if you have any questions, discuss that further.
Did you want to make any comments?
Actually, I'll bring those comments back to
John. Thank you very kindly. Recognizing what we have is we have a 4% efficiency, which amounts to $5,400 per each of the commissions. However, when we consider that the Department of Administrative Service has reduced their fees by somewhere between $9,735 up to a total of $12,813 for each commission, they actually have more net spendable revenue than the governor had originally anticipated they would have, and we have obtained the efficiencies that we've been asked to attain by our co-chairs. Are there any objections to the four budgets that we're considering in work session at this time?
Nope.
Any concerns about the fact that we're going the right direction?
Great. I like it very close.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perry.
Without objection, that includes the LFO recommendation on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Hospital 5028, which would be an approval of Package 201.
Would you address the 201, please, Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's one additional recommendation that only applies to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. Of the four commissions, they're the only one that has a proposal in the governor's budget that we are recommending that you approve that would actually increase their staffing. This would not be funded out of general fund. It's another fund project, which is essentially to say it's unfunded at this point. The commission would need to solicit funds to implement this program, but the purpose of the program would be to conduct educational forums on House Bill 2433 that built from the prior session, which relates to the standards for search and seizure procedures. And LFO is recommending that you approve this package, but we do recommend that the position that this package would authorize be of a limited, that you make it a limited duration position to expire at the end of this biennium, so that it is not automatically rolled forward in the agency's budget. And if the agency does wish to continue this program next session, they could then have the option of again presenting it as a package. But it's unclear at this point how long this program would need to continue in order to achieve its objectives. The subsidiary to that recommendation, we would recommend that you adopt the understanding that DAS will unschedule the portion of this limitation that is related to for personal services costs.
So if they raise the money, then it would be scheduled.
Right. So that they would not, that these funds would not be scheduled until they raise sufficient funds to do the year.
And the limited duration position, we understand that it would be a roll from one period to another. Thank you very much for that clarification, Senator Ferriola. Any other concerns relative to these four budgets that are under consideration in this session?
This fund is still coming from the other funds which they engage their own.
Similar to what the Women's Commission did last time. They did some very innovative things.
Sure.
I think Eli Lilly and some other companies came forward with some funds, and we certainly, the mission that we've heard in public hearing is to go ahead and bring private and other public partners on board to do the kinds of things these folks are doing. We encourage them to do that, and as they do that, then this doesn't roll up state government automatically. It lets them do that within the commission. Any objections then to the do-pass recommendations of the full ways and means on these four bills, Senate Bill 5540, Commission for Women, House Bill 5006, Commission on Asian Affairs, House Bill 5007, Commission on Black Affairs, and House Bill 5028, Commission on Hispanic Affairs. Senator Charles.
Mr. Chair, I think these are good budgets, and I would just like to thank Senator Lynn, and I'd like to thank you for pursuing the DAS situation and bringing about these savings. I think that's a good job, Walter.
Thank you very kindly. And I really appreciate the opportunity working not just with DAS and the other folks, but the good people of the commissions as well. They've been very understanding as we've kind of sorted through from you know, having and not having and having and not having. It depends on what day of the week after which budgets we've heard and whether or not we've extracted the efficiencies that we needed. And I owe that largely to the members of this subcommittee in helping us get the efficiencies in the other budgets and approving the efficiencies above and beyond the other 4% that we've looked for. If there are no objections, then we will pass with due pass recommendations to the full ways and means all four of the subject bills. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll go ahead and approve those for the full ways and means. Thank you very much.
Now that we've got it done, I'd like to join in thanking Chair for the work they've done, as well as the incredible amount of staff work that's done. I was a little worried a couple months ago, but good job and this is as good a bunch of work as I've ever seen.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's good. Very much. Thanks for the share number and at DAS that I do appreciate the work they have done. And as a commission member for their person over there, appreciate it.
Great appreciation for the Social Department of Administrative Service for being able to basically augment the budget.
And say something to the commission, too. We appreciate what you do. You really serve the state. We appreciate it.
Well, and we had such good public testimony, you know, I don't think, with exceptions, the public didn't come forward and say, you know, I sure hate to lose my good commission. And the good directors that we have for these commissions, and I'm very sensitive to that. You know, you get good people, and you've got to give them, and I'd love to have done this 2 months ago. Unfortunately, we didn't have the efficiency 2 months ago.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the fact that being so congratulatory, I do think the work that you do on this committee is good work, and I wonder if there are other ways in which our members might show their appreciation for the good work that you do.
We do every day. We come here, we're here more often than you are.
thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And I think my team is not lost on
the call. We'll start until 3 o'clock on Monday.